Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and you're stuck with me for the next couple hours. And it's a car show. And what a car show means is you call me up and you tell me year, make, model. Tell me what kind of problems you have. Tell me the symptoms. Tell me, I don't care what Uncle Henry in New York City thinks it is. I want to talk symptoms. What's it doing? Is it not start? Does it not crank? Does it not catch? Is there a vibration? You have a check engine light and you got the code. We can discuss all the possibilities of what that could be as well. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Years and years ago, when I started in radio, and this goes back to 1988, I was talking about car repair shops. And my mother called one day, and she said, you know, you should talk about your friends and not you. And I said, okay, tell me what you're thinking. And she just says, it doesn't do you any good to talk about yourself for an hour on the radio. She says, you need to talk about your industry. You need to talk about your friends. She says, don't you have any friends in the car repair business? I said, I do. That's how the best car repair shops got started. If you want to go there, marksalem.com, click on the best. Now, this list of people I've known for years and years and years, some of them for longer than 20 years. These are the best shops located geographically around town. They're really good. They know what they're doing. They, together, they might generate one nice complaint a year. One. Had one the other day about a pricing issue. And the shop took care of it right then. No problem. So, and there was a pricing issue that involved less than $10. But it was quick. We just took care of it. So, these guys are really the best of the best. And you can go there and look. And here's my promise to you. If you use one of my shops and something happens bad, I want you to file a nice complaint at the Better Business Bureau. Don't call them any names. The Better Business Bureau will likely come up with a finding, and they may or may not send it to the Auto Advisory Committee, which is a bunch of guys that look over automobile complaints. It's a committee I formed years and years and years ago. So they'll look it over, and they've got transmission guys and paint and body guys and mechanical guys and performance guys and air conditioning guys. They got a well-rounded group. If the Better Business Bureau sends it to the Auto Advisory Committee, and the Auto Advisory Committee tells the shop to make a refund or repair the car, and my shop doesn't, then I will fix your car or I will make the refund up to $5,000. It's written. It's written on our website. How many times have I had to do that? Zero. Never happened. Never, ever happened. Everything has always been until I hear from the customer, are you okay? You satisfied? Yes, I am. Perfect. We're done. So that's kind of how it works. But the best car repair shops is a nifty list. I'll tell you about one of them real quick. Action Autos at I-17 in Deer Valley. Full-service, family-owned auto repair shop that served the Deer Valley in the North Phoenix area since 1983. I've known Tom since early 80s. I met Tom when he worked for a company that sold. Remember when you put your car on the scope? Well, those scopes used to cost like $30,000 back in the 70s. Well, Tom was a salesman for one of those companies, and because he had an automotive background, he could make that machine dance. He made that machine look like there was a bunch of Albert Einsteins inside of it, but it had to do with symptom analysis and repair. So Tom's a good guy. I've known him a long time. He has ASE-certified technicians, and they're going to help you understand what they're doing and why, so that you can make informed decisions. And a lot of times it's, you don't have to deal with this now. You can deal with it 6 months from now or up to 6 months from now. So that's Action Auto, I-17 in Deer Valley. If you live in that area, then that's a good place to go. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I had a nice email from a lady, and that was the complaint. It had to do with a shop supply. And what happened in this complaint was that the person that the lady brought to the attention that my bill's like $10 more than you said it would be. And he goes, oh, well, that's shop supplies. And she says, can you describe that? And he says, well, that helps pay for our equipment. That isn't necessarily the truth. And so she got pretty upset about that, and rightfully so. I think my mom would have too. So the idea is that she paid it, and she wrote me a letter, And I explained shop supplies, and I'm going to explain those to you as well. But at the time, she said thank you. And then later she said, thank you very much for the explanation. It makes perfect sense. Shop supplies are those things that we can't bill independently of one another. And I'll tell you how we do it, and I'll tell you that everybody else follows the same thing. We can't charge you for all the spray materials we use on your car, the glues, the carburetor spray, the brake spray, WD-40, penetrating oil. We can't charge you for the acetylene and oxygen necessary to remove one of your ball joints. We can't charge you for our hand towels and the stuff that we use in and around your car, the door stickers. We can't look at all of this stuff. The weights on a tire, I'm going to think of these as I do them. The weights on your tire balance, we can't do that. It just can't happen. Our computer systems would be overcome with those kinds of little. So most of us, and the uniforms and the fender covers, and I'm thinking these are going to go along. All of that stuff's wrapped into a number, a monthly number. Then you divide it by the customers. And it's divided by parts and labor. For instance, certain shop supplies are pretty much on the parts side. So shop supplies are going to be, in my situation, shop supplies are charged against your part. For instance, I might charge you one, and I don't know what the number is, frankly, folks, because Andy, my daughter, handles that. But if all of our supplies were 1%, then we would add 1% to your total parts bill. Now, environmental charges is two-pronged. We have it assessed against your labor and your parts because environmental costs are huge. It can cost us $2,000 or $3,000 to pump our sand water separator, and that has to do with the byproducts of your car. The environmental stuff also has to do with all the stuff that we deal with, like, for instance, the solvent tanks that have to be EPA approved and stuff like that. We don't charge you to put your part in the solvent tank and clean it all up, but there's an environmental charge. We have to take your tires and throw those. We don't throw them away anymore. We have to send them to a recycler or have somebody pick them up and recycle them. Batteries. We have to pay for the disposal of batteries. So that's what it's all about. Now, most of us, it's about 10% of your whole bill. Now, we already know that sales tax is 10%. So we know that all we have to do in our estimates is take our sales tax and add that on to the ticket. So most of us do that. And I'll tell you something else. A lot of the best car repair shops, we've come to the conclusion that we're going to give you an estimate number that's 10% higher than it should be. We don't want to call you back for a set of windshield wipers. We don't want to do that. We want to be able to say to you, your bill is $120. Oh, what didn't you do? Nothing. Well, you bid it for like $130. I know. We just wanted to have a little bit of fluff, but it's only $120. So that's what you're going to pay. Oh, well, that's a nice thing. Most people, they recognize that. They go, wow, I don't have to, whatever, it cost me $10. Most of us overbid our estimates just for that little minutia that we might want to do. So if we're actually doing your brakes and one wheel seal is leaking grease, we're not going to call you back and ask you for another $12 for the seal. We're just going to do it knowing we can cover it with our estimate. So most of us do that kind of stuff, but it's not as easy. Now, I'll tell you a secret you can't tell anybody else. The average shop owner gets to keep between 9 and 11, maybe 12% of every dollar. 9 cents to 12 cents of every dollar. Then he has to pay, him or her, has to pay their personal income tax on that. So that's going to be 25 to 40%. So it's not like people perceive that we're making 50% gross profit. So if your bill's $100, I make 50. That's not true. I have to pay the technicians, the parts department. I have to pay to keep the lights on. I have a lot of expenses. So if I get to keep a dime, a dollar, then I'm going to pay a third of that. Or go the other way around. I make a dollar. 30% goes to taxes, and 10% is my profit. So it's just a whole lot of stupid numbers. But I don't know anybody, and we oftentimes share our profit and loss statements. I've never seen anybody that's been north of 12% on the dollar. So we got a caller. Who might that be, Gil?
That would be Chris.
Chris, good morning. How can I help you?
you probably get this question a lot, but I have a 2012 Camry and a 2006 Highlander. They're both four-cylinder engines. Do you have a suggestion of how often I should be changing the oil? And then the next question is, do you have a preference versus Mobil 1 or Valvoline? I know you probably get that a lot.
Well, I can answer both those questions really easy. There are three different oils. We have a conventional, a semi-synthetic, or also called a blend, and then we also have full synthetic, okay? Each one of them has a different interval. A conventional oil is 3,000 to 5,000, okay? That's pretty. So if you drive 15,000 miles a year, you're probably going to do, what, five oil changes? A blended oil goes from 7,500 to, I don't know. Oh, it goes from 5 to 7,500. I missed that gap. So with a blended oil, you can go to 7,500 miles, which is two oil changes a year if you drive 15,000 miles. A synthetic will go 10 to 12,000 miles a year. So you can go one oil change a year. So it has to do with what you want and the quality of your oil. As far as name brand is concerned, there's only four companies that pull oil out of the ground in the United States and make motor oil. All of those oils you have, with the exception of the obvious ones, like Valvoline, like Chevron, they actually make everybody else's. So I can assure you that General Motors oil, and I can assure you that Motorcraft oil, and I can assure you by Chrysler oil, was made by somebody who makes everybody else's oil. So with respect to what oil you should use, use anything you want. Buy the cheapest name brand oil you can find, and you'll be just fine. What do I sell? I sell Chevron. I sell Chevron for two reasons. It's perceived, and it is, the top quality oil. Plus, I like their product support. So if we have a car and we have a problem that's oil related, they're going to work with me, and I can use their labs to determine if the oil had water in it or had gasoline in it, or what failed, why did it fail, that kind of stuff. So I've got somebody standing behind me. They don't stand in front of me. They're not going to buy a motor if I screw it up. But I like the idea that we're a team. So I've sold Valvoline I've been in business 40 years. I sold Valvoline for 25 years. But the local retailer or the local wholesaler changed hands so many times towards the end that I no longer had a relationship. But some of the guys that were in that group went to Chevron, and I went with them. So that answers your question. Okay?
Is that the same for oil filters, that they're made by the same?
Yeah. 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 Wix and Champ make just about every oil filter out there. They just paint the different logos on the cans. That's it.
So for my Camry, I use synthetic oil. You're saying I should only change it every 10,000, and you're comfortable with that if it was your car?
Absolutely. Oh, all my cars are in synthetic. We got 32 cars in our fleet, including our rental cars and my family cars, our company cars. Everything has synthetic in it. We're running a 520 or a 530.
So one more question, if you don't mind. So my Sienna has 140,000 miles, and when I purchased it, the guy only used conventional. Is it wise to put synthetic oil, or is something going to happen with the seals and begin to leak after that?
First of all, your engine doesn't know what oil you can put in it. You can put Camel PP in there, and it's not going to know the difference. So there's nothing about this idea that you have to continue with Castrol. That's not true. Secondly, it's an oil consumption issue. You don't want to drink oil at $5, $6, $7 a quart. So that goes to conventional. Sure. So if it's not using the oil, pick an interval, and that picks the oil. If it's using oil...
I'm not going to be prone to leaks because of the viscosity change of seals.
You're talking 1970s, buddy. You're talking 19. I've been in this business since 1979, and that's what we heard about Mobil 1 when it first came out. Oh, my God, it's so thin, it's going to leak all over, your motor's going to go bad. None of that's the truth then, and none of it's the truth today. Got to run, but thank you. Thank you very much, Chris. Those are great questions, and I don't mind covering them. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and I'm your host, and we're here talking about cars. If you'd like to join us, you can, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And Mike Draskovic from Mike's Automotive Auto Tech is here. He's from 67th Avenue in Northern. Somebody just let you come here, didn't they? Did they give you a GPS to make it here?
Oh, right.
Yep, good, good, good. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960. Automotive Dynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive services. It's a second-generation family, and they've been around a very long time. So they don't pay their mechanics or their staff a commission or a percentage of your repair bill. Therefore, they can ensure that you don't sell unnecessary parts or repairs. So not everybody agrees with that philosophy, but it works well for them. And a lot of us are looking at them saying, I wonder what that's going to be like. So those are the issues. But Autodynamics is on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Michael, how are you, buddy?
I'm good.
Good for you. Good for you. Michael got tied up in traffic. He was supposed to be here with me.
Right.
But it's okay. It's okay that he's not here with us, and now he is.
Yes.
Let's go to the phones, okay?
Okay.
All righty. Galen, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. I do have an old question. I had a debate with my daughter-in-law. She read the article in Popper Mechanics and said, if you're coming up to a light and you put the vehicle in neutral and coast, that you actually will burn more gas with the engine on idle, because new computers will literally shut all the fuel off as you come up to the light in drive.
You want to run that by?
Well, that's a good question, but there are, the newer cars are shutting off automatically when you pull up to a light and sit there.
But that's a car that's supposed to.
Right.
The car that's still idling through the light. Galen, are we talking about the car that's idling through the light? I mean, idling while it's there, or the engine shuts off?
No. I'm talking about a regular traditional gas-operated vehicle, like the old style that was carbureted.
Okay.
And understandably, if you are going down the highway and you put the transmission neutral, it's going to burn less gas at idle versus under load.
Let me think kind of out loud here. So we're coasting along, and it depends on how many miles per hour we lose, but we're going to have to dump the throttle sooner or later to get back up to wherever we were at. Let me change your question. Mike,
okay.
Do you do that?
I don't.
Do you know anybody else who does that?
Can't think of anybody.
Have you ever, is that something that sounds like it would be beneficial, or would it just wear out your transmission?
It's probably a bad idea.
I don't see a benefit in it. I think the possibility is you'll come up to a traffic light or whatever, and you'll be in neutral, and you'll not remember. The light will turn green, you hit the gas, blah, blah, blah. I also think on the freeway, you're going to vary your throttle. So it's kind of like horses. You know, if you're going to back off the throttle on the horses, they're going to slow down. But sooner or later, you got to whip them back up to get going again. So I don't see that there's any science associated with that, unless you're going downhill. And if you're going if you're going downhill, then you don't have to put it in neutral. Just take your foot off the gas, and coast downhill as long and as far as you want. But today's cars are going to look for fuel delivery based on the temperature of the engine, the temperature of the atmosphere, where your foot's at, how deep your foot's in the throttle, how many big people you have in the car, how many set of golf clubs, and how many kegs of beer you got in the trunk. So it looks at that big picture. And this is everything since 1981. So there's a lot going on. But now, which side was your daughter at? She was insistent that throwing it in neutral?
No, she was the one that said it should be in gear. So
okay.
All
right. So there was someone else in this argument, not you.
Well, I've driven vehicles way back when it was all carburation.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I had some semi trucks that in neutral you could see that, you know, the mile per gallon gauge would show that you've got a lot more mileage if you were neutral versus doing that way. So
yeah, but
okay.
All right, I want to address that. Those mile per gallon gauges were typically, Michael, runoff vacuum.
Probably, yeah.
And that's taking and you're sitting there thinking, well, once the gauge goes to the green, then I'm saving gas. It's
right.
True, but we're talking droplets,
right?
And so we're seeing an instant change. based on the throttle, but it doesn't compute to anything substantial. I mean, the gas you might save by throwing it into neutral is about as much gas as when you blow your nose and your nose is running. We're not talking big gas here. So,
right.
But anyway, I'm not going to get in an argument between you and your daughter. Does your daughter live here in town?
She does right now.
Okay, well, I'm siding with her anyway. I'm scared of her, not you. All righty,
okay,
Gabe.
Cool. Appreciate it.
All righty. You bet. Larry, good morning. How can I help you?
Thanks, Mark, for taking my call. Mm-hmm. This is a voltage gauge question. I've got a kind of a hot rod, and it's got a 350 Chevy small block in it.
Okay.
And it's been running fine. And all of a sudden now my voltage gauge is going all the way past 16. It's bottoming it out on the gauge. I took a multimeter to the alternator at idle, and the alternator is running at 14.7. And I was wondering, should I be looking for something else, or is it just a bad gauge?
Well, you got to check it at the battery.
At the battery.
Yeah, okay, yeah. If a 13.4 to 14.8 is exactly the range you should be in. Right, Michael?
I agree.
1 minute.
Gauges aren't always accurate. You always have to validate the gauge, even on a factory gauge.
Yeah.
I assume you have an aftermarket gauge that you're reading?
Yes, aftermarket gauge,
right.
Yeah.
You know what I do is I'd pull the gauge out of the vac and take a pair of tweezers and just bend the needle.
But, bend it back up.
But really, if in fact you had a 16, you'd be smelling battery acid. And
okay.
Your headlights would go from dim to really, really bright when you took off at night. So if you checked it at the battery and you're between 13.4 and 14.8, you got a gauge problem.
Very good.
That's all there is. Okay?
That's a gauge problem. Yeah, thanks a lot.
You betcha. 602-508-0960. We have open lines. We have five lines. At the beginning of the next hour, Michael, I'm going to tell you a couple of stories.
Okay.
And there's a moral to this story. and you're going to laugh, but you're going to be right alongside me here.
I'm sure.
So 602-508-0960. We have five lines open. Give us a call. Hour, 10 o'clock. Mark Salem and Mike Draskovic from Mike's Auto Tech, 67th Avenue in Northern. He's sitting here next to me. You've got good guys, bad guys between the two of us, but I can't tell you who the good guy and the bad guy is. But I can tell you that both of us dance on both sides of that line.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right. Let me tell you about Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. Since 1970, they've been around providing really great care to their customers. It's the only shop in Mesa that I put my name next to. Oh, there's probably some other good shops that maybe haven't applied, but Thompson's, I believe, is at the top of the list. They're on the north or south side of Main Street, just east of Stapley. Brian and Thelma own and operate Thompson's. They do a good job for you. They have ASC-certified technicians, and they've been around a long time. Both of them, their families go back to maybe the late 60s or early 70s in the gasoline and car repair business. So these two kids probably pick cigarette butts off the parking lot. I almost bet it. All right, we got a bank full of calls. We're going to go to Henry first. Henry, how can I help you?
Well, good morning. Long time no talk to Mr. Salem.
Yes, sir.
I got a question.
You got it.
So I'm trading a 2006 BMW K1200 GT, which is a sport touring motorcycle. I'm trading it for a 2005 Mini Cooper S convertible out in California.
Okay.
What is your opinion of the 6-speed, 1.6-liter supercharged Mini Cooper?
Well, they're pretty fast. When you put a blower on them, you know, you're not sucking air into the motor. It's kind of like you got your weed eater stuck in somebody's mouth and you've got the throttle wide open. So, I mean, and then if it's got a 6-speed in it, that transfers a whole lot more power to the tires than an automatic does. So, I don't know what the value of the trade is and out, but I think, and it's not going to have the performance of your motorcycle, but it is a fun car. It's like the little Mazda Miatas, but I don't think they had a blower on them. You got any comments about that?
Yeah.
Oh, the little Minis are fun cars.
Okay.
Once you figure out how to work everything.
Yeah, well, they're like any other car.
I already have the name for it. It's going to be called Skirt. For Mini Skirt.
Oh, well,
because I'm hoping everybody will try to get a look under the hood.
Well, and that's a good idea. I think your wife needs to sign off on that.
Well, she's already down with that. Second question, real quick.
Okay.
I had a question about burning rubber. When I see people's tire marks from burning rubber, why am I seeing the tread? It seems like if the tires are spinning, I wouldn't get a clear look at the tread pattern.
Well, it depends on if they're going sideways or not. If it's sideways, then it's all black. But if they're spinning the tires, you're going to see the sipes or the grooves in the tire. So, but wow. I got to move on, though, Henry. Bob, you're up next. Bob, how can I help you?
Yeah, Mark. I have a 08 Mustang 4 GT with a 4.6.
I'm sorry?
I have a Ford Mustang GT.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
2008.
Yes, sir.
And once in a while, the transmission goes out of gear. It's like it goes into neutral. Would that be a sensor?
Well, wait a minute. Is it an automatic, I'm assuming?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's an automatic.
And does it go into neutral when you make a left turn or a right turn, or you stop or you start?
No. No.
Okay.
Only when I'm going like 30, 40 miles an hour, it'll go out of gear.
Mike?
And then it'll come back into gear eventually.
Okay.
You know?
We're not transmission experts, but we have somebody nearby that is, and we had a longtime customer come in yesterday with the same thing, 05 Mustang.
Yeah.
And I sent it over to our tranny gurus, and turned out it was losing second and fourth gear, and it was an internal band problem with the band strut.
Yeah. I think if it's not fluid, and I ask you the key questions about fluid, if it's not fluid, then I'm guessing it's going to be something on the inside, and I'm guessing that it's probably, how many miles are on it?
140,000.
Okay, well, it's been around the world six times, so if it decides to give up the ghost, then. But shop around, but it sounds like you've lost something inside, and having somebody who's been around a long time to rebuild it would be the best option for you. Okay?
I got one more question.
Sure.
Once in a while, my check engine light comes on, and it stays on for like four or five starts, and then it goes away for 10 days.
Okay. Well, that's an intermittent problem, and without the code, we wouldn't know what city the problem lies. So the code tells us the state, the city, the street, and the street number. And so the code, but it's an intermittent problem, so it's coming and going because the light otherwise would stay on. But it's a Ford. Right. What did you expect?
I know you're a Chevy.
I'm just teasing you. My wife drives a Ford.
My dad worked for Ford, and once in a while a car would stall or something. He'd say, "What do you expect, Bob? It's a Ford."
Well, you hang around the top of the hour, because at the beginning of the hour I have a couple of Ford stories, and they're going to knock your socks off. But you know what? Like I said, my wife drives a Ford, so it is what it is, and it's not anything that's gonna stop the world. This Ford and Chevy thing's been going on since the 1950s. So it's nothing that I'm adding fuel to the fire, and it's nothing I care about. Nevertheless, thank you very much. David, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, well, back to the Mini Cooper. And by the way, I have a lot of Fords, and I like Ford a lot.
It's good.
But I also own 7 Saabs, so I'm not that smart.
Thank
you. I got a Cooper S, same year model, an 07. It leaks like crazy, and I've been changing all the components, the wonderful little plastic pieces connected to the engine that were the source. And I thought I had a main leak, you know, the rear main was leaking, but I'm still not so sure because it's so hard to tell. But when I stop at a light, sometimes when the engine's warm, the low pressure light comes on, and it goes away, you know, usually pretty quick. Is that more of an indicator that my pump has problems, or just the viscosity of the oil, or what would you say?
I think the wise thing to do would be have somebody take it to a shop you trust and have them hook up an oil pressure test gauge.
I've got one. I'm from Texas.
Just hook it up.
Good.
That'll answer your question.
Yeah.
Just take the sending unit out, put your gauge in there, tape it to the windshield, and
there
go drive
go.
It.
It only happens in idle, so I guess I really wouldn't even have to drive it to see what it is in idle.
It's up to you. The question really is, you can't answer the question until you do this test, but the question is the gauge getting bad information from the sender? Another thing you could do is just put a new sender in it.
Okay.
Yeah, how much is it a gauge or a light?
Oh, it's just a gauge.
Okay.
I mean, excuse me, just a light. I wish there was a gauge.
All right. Well, I mean, how much can that sender be? If it's
20, 30 bucks.
Yeah, you know, at the I'm saying between 25 and 50, depending on where he buys it. Yeah. So
by what? A gauge or a tester?
The sending unit.
Oh, the sending
unit. The sending unit, yeah.
I'll figure out where it is.
Okay, as far as the leaks are concerned, you need to go after the PCV valve system first, and we have the new technology that's been here for about 15 years where we put dye in the oil. And then all we do is take a light that shows up the dye as lemon or orange or pink or whatever, and we just trace the dye to the place where it's leaking. So if it's a rear main, that's fine. But it can also be the back of the head, and it can also be the back of the valve cover. And I can't tell you how many times people bring it in with the, you know, the engine all apart, and they say, I needed to replace the rear main seal, and then it turns out it's not even
well,
the
all right,
seal.
Well, here, answer this question. It looks like it's coming from the starter. You know what I mean?
Well, it doesn't make any difference. It's coming from above the starter.
Yeah, I know it's above it. Well, yeah. But it's very difficult to see. I know it's easy. I can power wash the engine, clean everything, but I can't really see up into the engine if I did put dye in it.
I know. You don't have a hoist, and you don't have gray hair, and and you don't have a mirror, and you don't know where to look. So, I mean, you know.
The thing except the hoist, I guess.
Yeah. I know. You got the
but
gray hair.
But you know what? You're right, though. It's a very fun car. I drive an Exploder normally, which, by the way, I need to know about the transmission fluid thing. You know, I got an 05, 07 or whatever this is, Explorer, and you can't check it, you know. And so I did the brilliant thing one day of going to go ahead and check it myself, and I wasn't sure if I put as much in as I lost or lost more than I put in. And I don't know if and the transmission fluid, of course, looked perfectly fine, and I don't know when it was changed last. But I just feel kind of ridiculous going into.
All right. Well, this is just the stereotypical cowboy that I've been around my whole life, and let's deal with the problems later. The answer is you could have gone on the internet and found out how to change or how to check that fluid. You could have found out how to change it. You could have found out how to put it in and out of the right fluid. What you got right now is a mess. If you don't have any shift problems, who cares? But if you want to fix it, then you're going to have to do a drain and refill. And I didn't know that they put sealed transmissions in an 0508.
They do.
Okay.
I found that out the other day.
So that's what you're going to have to do. It's a process, but it's a measuring in and a measuring out. And there may or may not be a time where you have to flush through the cooler as well. And there may or may not be another screw or bolt that you can pull out and you fill it till it comes out of this other area. I got to go. But, Deborah, stay right there because you'll be first. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 45 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Mike Draskovic from Mike's Auto Tech, 67th Avenue in Northern, is flying wingman for me today. We have four open lines. Deborah, we're going to get to you in about 2 seconds. 602-508-0960, four open lines, 602-508-0960. And Deborah, thank you very much for holding as long as you did. How can I help you?
Well, thank you, the M&Ms of the morning.
Yes, that's a good thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a question. I'm looking for a one-ton diesel to pull a big horse trailer.
Okay.
And I understand that the Duramax with the Allison is like the epitome of what I'm looking for. If I can't get the Allison trainee with the Duramax, I have a 91 Dodge Ram. Could I put an Allison into that?
No.
Because that's a great engine, no?
Yeah. No, and let me chime in here. I like the Allison. I think it by far is the best transmission in the one-ton you can buy. But the new Dodge has been out for a couple years, and it has exhibited perfect maintenance and perfect performance. On the Ford side, I would say that on a 1 to 10 scale, the Allison's a 10. The Dodge is a 9, and the Ford's a 7 or 8. You with me?
I'm with you
okay.
on that.
Now, as far as the engine's concerned, the Duramax is a 6.6 liter V8. It's got cylinders, and I'm just teasing you on this, about the size of lemons. Because they're stretching 6.6 over a V8. The Dodge is a 6.7, and it's a 6-cylinder. And then the Ford has their 6.7 that's also a 6-cylinder. I drive the 6.7 Dodge. I haul horses. Mine's a 1-ton. and I converted from Chevrolet to Dodge because my son has a Dodge, and when we were out in the pasture drag racing, he could always beat my Chevy, and that made me mad. So
Yeah.
And so to answer your question, I don't think you should be with tunnel vision here. I think you should drive the Allison and drive the Duramax and the Allison. Look at the interior comforts, and then I think you should drive the Dodge. Both of them are going to have DEF in them, diesel exhaust fluid, and I think you should drive both of them and see which one fits. Now, you're going to want a backup camera. You're going to want you may want Air Ride. The new Dodge has Air Ride. So if you hook up your horse trailer, you don't have to do nothing. As the tongue drops down the horse trailer and the rear bumper goes down 2 inches, it comes right back up 2 inches. And it has a camera for the gooseneck hitch. So if you're going to hook up your trailer on a gooseneck, you can back right into it. And if it's got a bumper pull, you've got a camera back there too. So it's pretty fancy. Say that again?
It kind of sounds like you're trying to sell me on a Dodge.
You know, I don't care what you buy. I'm just telling you the truth. I have customers with Chevy Fords and Dodges, and they all love their cars, except the Fords. They have the 6-liter and the 6.4. Everybody knows those were terrible motors. The 6.7 on the Ford side has been a great motor so far, and I expect it will continue. I think that the Ford interior, that King's Ranch interior, was second to nothing until Dodge came out with the Longhorn interior, which is a mirror image of the King's Ranch. And the King's Ranch is for you and I. It has saddlebags on the back of the driver's seat and the passenger seat. It's all leather. It's fancy-dancy. And you sure as hell isn't going to let nobody get into that truck with his pair of spurs on. So,
this is good news. All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate your insight on
I'll tell you too something else. We just shopped a Dodge van for our shuttle service, and I challenged my daughter to buy the van at sticker, nothing else. No sales tax, no license plates, no get ready, no freight, no desert protection package, no Teflon on the seats, no rubberized tires, none of that crap. Whatever the sticker says, that's what you write your check for. And she did it. She did it. And we didn't buy a year-old van either. We bought a new one. Now, I'm going to just say to you, no one's paying me to say this, but I think if you're going to buy a Dodge, you should talk to Tempe Dodge. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Because that's where we got that deal.
Yeah.
So that's all I'm telling you. I think you should stop. If you're a cowgirl, you have an extra heart in you, but you also bite. And so this is the time you draw the middle, and you look at the sticker, and you find something you like, and say, how about if I just write my check for this much money? And see what happens.
Wow.
Okay.
I like it a lot.
All righty. Well, good luck to you, Deborah.
Thank you very much. I appreciate this. Thanks.
You're welcome. You're welcome. You've seen all those ads on the ticket. The truck is $40,000. By the time you get out of there, you're at $52,000.
Yeah.
And now, sales tax and license is a given, right?
Yep.
But when at the big picture, the desert protection package, what's that called?
Snake oil.
Well, I call it mop and glow.
Mop and glow.
It's kind of like you're taking floor and you're mopping and glowing the truck.
Right.
Okay? Then what's the freight? Isn't it already in the MSRP?
Usually it's on the sticker itself.
It's already there.
Yeah.
Okay, and what about the get ready?
Oh, my. Yeah.
Yeah. That can be, and then the dock fee. The one that wads my panties up the most is the dock fee.
Yeah.
We're going to have some young lady, not to diminish her skills, she's going to type in her name, address, and phone number on contract. And she's going to push this button and put the vehicle on there, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Now, they'll sell the truck cheap if they can get all the rest of those profit centers taken care of. So it's up to you to decide what you want to do. Who we got next?
We have Jerry.
Jerry, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Eric. I've always wanted a 57 Chevy four-door wagon.
Okay.
And my question is, do we try and find something that's got the fuel injection, or do we stick with the old-school cars?
Michael.
He's looking for a 57 Chevy?
Yep, 57. It's 57. It's not 57.
Okay. Well, now, that's a broad question. Now, you want something with fuel injection. A lot of these cars have been... resto-rotted, which right. they modernize them. They put they put all the amenities of a new car under them, including
electric
fuel
windows,
injection.
Air conditioning, fuel injection.
And we're doing a lot of that kind of stuff at our shop these days.
Yeah.
And now the 57 real fuel injection was mechanical, and it was very cumbersome, and it's something really cool. At the time, it was leading-edge technology, and now it's like a dinosaur.
Hard to get parts
so
for.
You can't get parts for it. So
I was thinking more of the modern type of
injection. Now, they have these retro kits that you take the carburetor off, and you upfit the car with fuel injection all in one box.
Right.
It's an amazing program. I was just showing Mark one that we did at our shop on my phone. And we've done a number of them, and they're very impressive.
Okay, I agree with you on the impressive part.
Right.
But it matters who put it on, how does it drive, how does it start, how does it look, all that stuff. If you take a 57 Chevy that's all stock, it's worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
So you can leave that alone. But if you find somebody who's got R134 air conditioning system on it, somebody who's got a fan shroud that they may or not have put on it, somebody who has the updated stereo system and has fuel injection on it, and has taken the vacuum wipers off of it and put electric motor on it, and maybe even put electric windows in it, and as long as it looks nice and passes the used car check over that you're going to have your repair shop do, then I say buy the modern one or buy the OEM. But there's no middle ground here. Okay, you don't want to buy something that somebody's just done one thing and it's hard to start and doesn't run very good and it smells like fuel. That's not what you want. So you either get the one this is the car that my mother always wanted, down to what color it is and all that other kind of stuff, or this is a 57 Chevy that's been brought up to the 20th century and it's a little bit of a hot rod and it has all the amenities with suspension and fuel injection and transmission modifications and exhaust, and I don't have a catalytic converter on it. So those are the kind of options you have. But I'm with Mike. Now, there's two kinds of fuel injection, throttle body, which is a carburetor with two injectors, or port fuel.
Right.
He can do either one.
Right.
And you can do either one, and the distributor's going to kind of drive that. So that's what you got, okay?
That's it.
All right. Thank you very much. And do we have anybody else, Gil?
Nope. Lines are open.
All right. Lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. When we come back on the other side of the hour, which is going to be in about 8 minutes, I have a story to tell you.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you right now, it's about Fords.
All right.
Okay? And it's their true stories.
Okay.
I'm going to swear.
All right.
All right? And go ahead and pull your phone up and have the front of the Bible. And I'm going to put my hand on your phone, and I'm going to tell you truthfully about these Fords. Now, I'll set the ground rules. Or not ground rules, but I'll give you the backup. Very few people have my cell phone. It's my most private possession. Otherwise, I could answer car questions 24 hours a day, you know, 60 times an hour. So, but there are a few guys that do have my cell phone. And so, as you can well imagine, like you, they'll call you. Now, just before I got on the air, a friend of mine called me from California, and he has a 32 hot rod that he just bought for a whole lot of money, and it has an all-aluminum 454.
Oh, my.
And he wants to know what to set the timing at. And I told him, just advance the distributor till she rattles and back off.
That's the way my dad showed me.
Now, he also says that he has a backfire, and he thinks it's the head gasket. And I said, is it just a boom, boom, boom at idle? He goes, yeah. And I said, well, I don't think it's a head gasket. I think you got a rocker problem or a valve problem. Mm-hmm. But he's pretty astute. So I said to him, and this is a General Motors product anyway. I said to him, pull the valve cover off. He goes, I already have. I said, put that cylinder on top dead center. It's number 6 he's concerned with. Mm-hmm. He does. I says, are the rockers, and it's got roller rockers too. Are the rockers tight on the valve head, on the stem, or are they loose? No, they're really tight. Okay, well, let's give each one of them half a turn out.
2 minutes.
And start it up and see if we've got the backfire.
Yeah, yeah.
So I teach him how to, and now what's the spec? And I said, well, go to two of the other cylinders, put them on top dead center, and see where they're at. And that's the easy part about it. So anyway, these guys call me, and they have problems. And I'm trying to work off of their eyes.
Right.
And they know better than to say to me, well, I checked with YouTube because YouTube drives me crazy.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's one of those, I need the give and take. Mm-hmm. You know, I need to know this. What's your answer to this? When your air conditioning doesn't work, does it ever work? Yes, when I first started up. When does it go away? After I start moving. What happens when you come to a light? It gets cold again. Oh, we're looking at a blend door or something like that. So I can help, but we have to have the give and take.
Yep.
We have to have the give and take. Yep. So that's what this is all about. But we got another hour of this, so if you want to dial in, you can. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And you can be first. We have five lines. Mike from 67th Avenue in Northern from Mike's Auto Tech. He does new cars and he does old cars. So if you go by his shop, you'll find 57 Chevys in there. You'll find 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. I don't think there's too many 80s cars that anybody wants to restore.
Not so much. No.
I don't think that those, well, that's where we went from points and condensers. Well, actually in 70s, we went from points and condensers to electronic ignition. But the 80s cars were unbelievably bad.
Yeah.
And so nobody really has an 80s car, unless, of course, you know, they met their wife in the back seat or something like that. It has to do with some kind of a sentimental thing. So, but the 80s cars are just not anything that we promote that people should fix. So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Mike Draskovic from Mike's Auto Tech and Mark Salem will be back in about 8 minutes. Me is Mike Draskovic from Mike's Auto Tech, 67th Avenue in Northern. He's flying wingman for me today. The lines are open, 602-508-0960. All right, I'm going to tell you my Ford story.
Let's hear
it. My Ford story. All right. First guy calls me, and he says to me, actually, we're having lunch up in Payson, and he says to me, you know, my window won't roll up on the passenger side. And I said, I think I can fix that for you for a dollar.
Okay.
Okay? You know where I'm going with this? Okay.
I'm getting there.
All right. So he says, I don't believe you. And I says, all right, I'll tell you what. If I fix it, you owe me a dollar. And if I don't fix it, I'll give you five. Mm-hmm. Or I'll buy your lunch. He says, okay. So the whole entourage goes outside. Mm-hmm. And so I say to him, go over to the driver's side and start the car up. And hold the window button up and count to 10. Mm-hmm. So he goes over, the door's open, starts it up, and he starts counting out loud. And for to be dramatic, I let it get down to like 8.
Okay.
And they're all looking at me, and I'm not doing anything. Then I take my fist, and I hit the outside of the door hard. And the window goes up.
Okay.
So I won. And so they're all laughing at me, and they're laughing at him. So he owes me a dollar. Mm-hmm. And so we laugh, and that still's going on. Okay. Now, there's a bunch of guys up in Payson that we have breakfast together, and it's retired cops and Marine guys, guys in the military, stuff like that. The first guy was a retired Marine, and he's also part of the rescue guys up in Gila County. This next guy's a retired Marine, and he also is a retired highway patrolman. So he calls me the other day. Actually, he's not a Marine. He's a retired cop. He calls me the other day, and he's on his motorhome trip, and he says to me, I have a lot of problems. And I said, I know what brand your motorhome is. And he goes, well, the one that's bugging me the most is the cruise control doesn't work. And I said, okay, I want you to hook your foot underneath the brake pedal. I want you to pull it towards you and see if the cruise will set. And he goes, okay, I'll call you back. And he calls back and he goes, no, it won't set. So do you have any idea what would you tell him next?
Well, I don't know.
All right, push on the buttons hard. Okay, yeah, rock the buttons hard.
Try that.
All right, and he calls me back and he says, no. I said, okay, so this time you're going to turn it on and hold your set button down, and I want you to beat on the steering wheel at 12 o'clock and at 6 o'clock and at 3 o'clock and 9 o'clock. Mm-hmm. He calls me back. It's working.
Oh, wow.
Okay?
Okay.
So what's the moral of these stories?
Well, probably lack of use.
Lack of use?
Yeah. Okay. That's why they went bad.
Are you, Gil, you ready?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Here's the story. Wait just a minute.
Girl Scout here.
Okay. Obviously, we have a connection problem, either in the clock spring on the steering wheel or something like that. And we also have a bad set of brushes on the door motor because all I did is hit it hard and jar the brushes down to the armature.
Right.
Okay. Can I get another drum roll, please? Here's the answer. Here's the moral of this story. If you own a Ford, the only tool you need in your toolbox is a hammer.
Okay, I get it. Right.
And you've got to draw that same conclusion. You've got to draw that same conclusion. Yeah. No matter who owns a Ford, if you can fix it and all you need is a hammer, then that should be the only tool in your toolbox.
BFH, I wonder if the F stands for Ford.
We can't go there.
Okay.
But it doesn't stand for Ford. Oh man!
About that.
They both threatened me because they both carry guns. They both threatened me that they would hurt me, harm me if I gave their names. But I can't tell you this much. They both live in Payson, and their first names are identical. Daryl. I'm not giving you the last names. I'm just saying both of them have the name of Daryl. I just want to say that. Now, they have my cell phone, so I'm going to change my phone number because I can't fix their cars when they're out there, going here and going there. But I teased them immensely about that. I teased them immensely. And then, of course, they're saying, well, what's the matter with your Dodge? And when was the last time you had it? My Dodge just rolled 100,000 miles. Just rolled 100,000. It's been to the dealers 3 times. You know what for? Recalls.
Okay, there you go. Yeah.
It's never been in for anything.
So Alan was right.
And I'll tell you something else about my Dodge. I went in for the 100,000-mile service, and I'm going to do belt and hoses before next summer. I'm going to go through this summer. I'm going to do belt and hoses next summer. I said to them, I think there's a filter on the valve cover that needs to be replaced under a small plate. I want you to do that. And then I want you to replace the air filter because I have an air filter monitor that's coming off. Mm-hmm. And I says, and my air conditioning isn't as good as it used to be. Mm-hmm. And so I want you to take care of that. So John came over to me and he goes, I got your air fixed. And I said, okay, I want to know 2 things. What did it have in it in ounces? Mm-hmm. And what did it call for? What's the capacity?
All right.
And he says there's 8 ounces difference. And I said, well, how does that relate to the total amount of refrigerant?
Right.
And he says it's 1/3.
Yep.
So I get in it, and I head back north. It's a hot day. It's well over 100. And the thing is throwing ice cubes at me. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
As you know, we never had a dipstick for the Freon. Mm-hmm. We never did. Mm-hmm. So you chime in here. We used to look at the ambient temperature.
Right.
And what else?
Right.
You give one.
The sight glass.
Sight glass, which was crazy.
Yeah.
Then we used to look at the low pressure depending on the ambient temperature and the high pressure depending on the ambient temperature.
Right.
We also had a struggle on which fan speed do we use, 1, 2, 3, or 4.
Right.
And then we also had, if we didn't have a sight glass, then we were also looking at the air vent gauge and see what kind of ice we could blow out of the gauge.
Right.
So, and then there had to have been 5 other variables.
Right.
There was 5 other things. Put a fan in front of the car. Bring the idle up. No, don't bring the idle up. Forget the fan. Everybody had a different story.
Yep.
So today.
Can't do that. Can't just dump a little Freon in. You got to have the charge precise.
Exactly. The best part of what we have today is we have these electronic dipsticks. So he goes in and sucks out all my Freon. He cleans it up. He takes the metal and the moisture out of it because they all shed a little bit. And so he looks at it, and I don't remember what the numbers are, but he looks at it and 24 ounces. That's what I hold, but I'm 8 short.
Wow.
So he cleans up my Freon, and he puts it right back into my truck.
Right.
And he adds 8 ounces.
Right.
So I pay for, if I had to pay for it, it's $125, but there's shops all over town that have lower and upper. But it's $125 plus the 8 ounces.
Right.
And now the difference is astounding.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So we now know, as you just alluded to, that the precise amount of refrigerant has everything to do right. with the success of your car.
Right.
No question about it.
But the bottom line is the R134 is very unpredictable.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
that's
yeah.
it. You just can't go by the pressures. Can't go by the temperature.
Right.
There's too many. When you're, you said there was five variables on R12,
yeah.
how many do you think there is on 134?
Oh, twice or three times.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So it's a, and you had to do the inside temperature and the outside temperature, and then you had to do your controls. Were we doing recirc or were we doing outside air? And yeah. was your cold and hot button all the way to the right? Yeah. And on and on and on.
Yeah.
But now with these electronic dipsticks, had a guy, people have heard this story before. So he says, you know, you say you can fix my air conditioning. And I said, well, if it runs and it's capable, yeah. And if you're willing to pay for it, he says, I just want you to do your Freon thing. I said, that's fine. So we give him his car, we give him his keys, and he says, you also said that if we didn't like it, we don't have to pay for it. And I said, you're right. That's what I said.
Yeah.
If you don't like it. And I typically do that to the customers that have been with me for years, but you're a first-time guy, so I'll extend that to you. But
yeah.
it's the only one you're ever going to get from me at this
yeah.
point.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, fine. And he says, okay, well, I'm going to take it out and drive it, and I'll call you with my credit card. And I said, okay, fine. He isn't gone 10 minutes, and he calls my son, and he says, here's my credit card number. So I called him back and said, you know, what do you think? And he goes, oh, it's like brand new. He said, I didn't know how bad it was until
right.
you got me up where I was at,
right.
which is exactly the way I felt when John did mine.
Yeah.
I felt, gosh, I didn't realize how bad it was. So anyway, we got a caller. Who's that?
That'd be Tom.
Tom, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Yes, sir. I've got a Ford question for you, but I inherited it, so please don't. I plead not guilty.
It's okay. It's okay.
I've got an 07 Ford Ranger. It's got like 24,000 miles on it, and it's been sitting for 4 years. I got to get it going again. Need new battery and probably a new fuel filter. What else should I do?
Oil and filter?
You change the fluids in it.
Yeah.
Probably all the fluids.
Yeah. How many miles? 24,000?
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
It was my late father's, and it's been in a garage for, you know, the last 4 years, you know. I need new tires, of course, you know, no big deal. But I was wondering about the fuel injection. There's only about a gallon of gas in it, so I'm going to drain the gas. Should I pull the tank down and flush it out, or?
I wouldn't.
Okay, just drain the fuel and then replace the filter?
Yeah, I do the filter, and I would fill it full of clean fuel. I change the oil and filter.
Yeah,
I'd get it running. And once you got it running, I'd use the heck out of it. And I would, and I think some of the things that you'll have at the beginning will go away. So if you got
right.
a rough idle, I think it'll go away. I think there'll be a lot
right.
of things that come. I think at the end of the day, I agree with Mike. I think you got all the fluids in front of you, and if it's that old and got the original belts and hoses, you I'm not going with you anywhere. So belts
okay.
and hoses and fluids, but really
right.
and truly, all this idea of pulling the spark plugs and squirting oil in it and waving a dead chicken around your head and honking the horn three times and, you know, putting this additive in the fuel tank as the injectors are plugged up and all this happy stuff where my motor's going to love me if I do all this stuff is just craziness. It's just
so
crazy.
I was going to do that.
Yeah.
I was going to do that, pull the spark plugs and squirt oil. That's not necessary.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you think this is going to crank over the first time you ask it to?
No.
It's not.
No.
You're going to crank and crank and crank just like we all do. Now, when you hit the key, the fuel pump's going to fire up, and it's going to take a while for it to prime and get all the air out of it and stuff like that. By the time you start this motor, it's going to have plenty of oil pressure because you've been
okay.
cranking on it. So, no, the answer, no, Mike. If you had a car that's been sitting for 2 years, you're going to take the spark plugs out and squirt oil in them?
Not necessarily. No.
Okay, I'm not at all. I'm not at all. Even if I have to disconnect the coil wire and crank it, you know, for 15 seconds, walk away, crank it for 15 seconds, walk away, I'm going to build oil pressure in it. I'm going to get the cylinder walls wet and stuff like that. So unless,
that's
of course, if you get a new battery and you hit the key and it goes, chick, and it's a possibility that the motor is not going to crank over real easy, then I'd pull the plugs, put some oil in it, but then I'd put a big breaker bar on the front of that crankshaft bolt, and I'd do the best I could there. So I'd cycle it three or four circles.
Which direction would I turn it? Does it matter?
I don't care. I think the pistons are going to go up and down no matter whether you but if you wanted to tap the starter, I think as you face it, it's going to run clockwise. I think.
So change the antifreeze. What about the rear differential? Just leave that alone.
All the fluids. Okay. Rear diff, tranny, brake, power steering, engine oil, everything.
Okay.
It's not that hard.
Okay.
It's gonna be easy.
Okay, very good. Listen,
okay.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome, Tom. You're welcome. That's a good question.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just kind of don't go crazy, because the worst part is you do all kinds of crazy stuff, and then all of a sudden you're in the position where you're going to start it up, and it's got a rod knock, and you just did all that work for nothing, unless you're going to put another motor in it.
Yeah.
So that's why I like what you said. It's let's wait on the hoses and belts. Let's wait on the fluids. Let's just get it running and drive it, and then we'll go from there. All righty, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. Gil is there, and Gil's a really nice guy. Don't use any bad language, because he's never heard that before. He's never heard it from me or any other talk show host during the breaks. So be nice to Gil. God bless him. He has just worked hard and made me who I am today. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 22 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Mike Draskovic, and he does car work at 67th Avenue and Indian School. And the name of his shop is Mike's Auto Tech. And he's a good guy, and he's been around the block, and we both share the same color hair. And the only difference between the two of us is his hands are a little dirtier than mine, but I washed mine before today, and Mike didn't. I'm just teasing you. All righty. Let me tell you about Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenwood. Tom Blackwell and I are cut from the same cloth. We're a tad ornery. We're pretty good at what we do. And we both have very strong females around us to make sure that we understand what the boundaries are. Tom is at 40th and Greenway. He's been around a long time. I've known him since, I'm thinking the mid-1995, thereabouts. He's a good guy. He knows how to fix your car. And he also knows to give you good advice. So if you want to do something and he wants to make a suggestion, he'll offer that to you. And he's got a good staff. And he's been around a long time, and that's kind of important to all of us, because I'm not going to send you to somebody who opened up day before yesterday, because many of those people that open up all kinds of businesses fail in the first year. You don't want a motor with a warranty and no shop to take it to. So Blackwell Automotive, 40th Street and Greenway. Let's go to the phones, and we're going to go to Larry first. Larry, good morning.
Good morning. My question is in reference to a 2016 Hyundai Elantra. We had a minor accident a month or so ago, got the body repaired. It was just some little bumper. It was my daughter.
Okay.
A car stopped in front of her. She ran into the back of him. So body work done fine, no problems. But the remote sensing, we haven't had any problems with it, so it didn't seem like it was battery, the remote.
Uh-huh.
But it's a push button start.
Okay.
And yesterday morning and this morning, my wife, I'm blind, so I'm not the driver.
Okay.
Don't know why the state doesn't let me do that, but
yeah.
They don't.
So, I don't know why.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me. But anyway, so it has hesitated in starting with the push button start. Not had any problem before with that, with the remote, until yesterday morning. And then the other thing the remote has been doing since the little accident is it hasn't always unlocked the doors.
Okay. All right. I think we can encompass all of that into intermittent a fob working.
Right.
And obviously, we got to replace the battery first. The second thing is all cars come with two of them, so we need to take the other one. We need to start switching them off. So you take...
We don't have a second one. We bought it used, and we didn't get a second one.
Okay. All right. Well, now might be the good time to do it, but I think 50% of them, Mike, are batteries,
right?
And 50% of them are programming.
Right.
And so if you look in your owner's manual, I have your wife look in the owner's manual, then it's you go through and ask her to look at the remote and see if there's a programming paragraph in there. and it will describe on how to do it. Now, if not, you're going to need to take it to a shop, and we're going to have to tell the computer, hey, pay attention. We want to erase all the fobs, and we want you to only pay attention to this one. So, and Mike, give me a range. Take your price and go below it and above it.
We're not fully equipped to do that on all cars, so we have an outside service we bring in.
Okay.
It's anywhere from $100 to, if you're going to replace a fob, that's added in.
Yeah, you're going to be between $75 and $150, depending on if you're going to replace the fob. But this isn't a big deal. Your key will still work on the doors and stuff like that. But
yeah, everything seems to be fine other than, just like you said, the intermittent. And the only reason I question it being a battery is that we'd had no problems with it before the accident.
I know, but I don't want you to chase your tail just because think. You know what I mean?
Sure.
The light bulb has to burn out someday. And if it didn't burn out during the accident, then it could have burned out an hour later, a week later, or a year later. But I was careful when I told you 50% of the time it's the battery, and 50% of the time it's a programming issue. So let's play the odds better, okay? All righty. Thank you very much, Larry. Thank you very much. And, Bill, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yes. Hey, how you doing?
We're good. We're good, both of us.
Great. Listen, I got an 05 Sierra GMC 3/4-ton diesel Duramax. My question is to deal with the air conditioner. Now, what happens is every once in a while it starts blowing hot air.
Okay.
And then what I do is I pull over and I reboot it. I turn it off, turn everything off, turn the engine off, turn it back on, and boom, I got air conditioning.
All right, now I need to ask you some questions because we're running up against a break. Where are the air conditioning controls? Are they on maximum or recirculatory? And where's your fan speed? And are you on automatic?
yes, I'm on automatic.
Okay.
The fan wouldn't be on maximum.
Okay, if you're on automatic, the fan is controlled by the automatic. So it happened to me on the way down this morning. I set it at – it was 50 degrees when I left Payson, so I thought maybe I should put it at 68. And so it turned on the air conditioning, and I'm about 10 miles south of Payson, and then all of a sudden it started blowing warm air. And so I just reached over and kicked it down a couple of degrees because I'd rather have cold air, and it gave me cold air.
Minute.
So my point is when we use automatic – It depends on the system, but it's not uncommon for it to switch from cold air to hot air at a particular number and vice versa. So what I want you to do to ensure that we don't have a problem is I want you to take it off automatic. I want you to run it on max. I want you to make it as cold as it can be, run the fan speed on max, and then adjust the temperature of the fan for yourself, and I'll bet this problem goes away.
Okay.
All right. So just try that first before you do anything and spend any money. Because I understand that you're pulling off to the side of the road, but there's so many things that can be going on there that I don't think that that's worth it. Just let's try it in a different mode and see what happens. And if it's fixed, then we can talk to you more about it. But I got to go. We'll be back in a minute.
About 212 degrees.
Bingo. I asked somebody from ASU the other day, and they didn't know. Oof. All right. Jerry, you made me proud, buddy. So at 212, we're going to run that motor at 212 and north of that. So we put a 195 thermostat in it, and today we know that 220 to 240 is a normal range. Now here's what happens. Every time you shut the car off, you make it, as the air condenses, you get a tablespoon of water. Now that adds up. But every time you drive it and you get it over 220 or get it up to 220, we turn that tablespoon of water to steam, and then it sends out the tailpipe via the PCV valve system. So it's a home run. So I want to tell you that if you're running between 220 and 240, God bless you. Somebody did something right. So you have nothing. Oh. Now, at 260, I start to get worried. At 270, you're in big trouble. Okay? And at 300... you better say goodbye to that motor. So just 220 to 240, you'll be happy.
Okay, well, okay, you calm my nerves then.
I promise you what I'm telling you is the truth. I promise you, Mike.
2 minutes.
The new cars, where do they run?
190 to 210.
Okay.
220 really? Is not overheating.
No, not at all. No. And so, and then when you get on the freeway, does it cool down just a tad?
Yes.
Okay, and see, you're running air across the radiator. So what you said matches perfectly to what we do. So I want you to say goodbye. I want you to go tell your wife, let's go to dinner, and stop at the florist and buy her some flowers, because we just made your day.
You did.
All
right.
All right, Jerry. Thank you very much. I said that one time. The guy goes, I don't have a wife. I said, well, go find one for the night anyway. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. Gil, the lines are wide open.
We have a caller, but we have a breakup also coming up.
Oh, we do. All right, well, let me get the caller's name, and then I'll put him. Tom, you stay right there, and then we're going to get you right after the break. And you know what? I'm just going to break early for Tom. Is that okay? Are you ready, Gil?
I'm ready.
Okay, back to you, buddy. For everything. Mac Draskovic from Mike's Auto Tech sitting here next to me. Does old car stuff, new start car stuff, oil changes and everything in between. He's at 67th Avenue in Northern, and I've known him for quite a few years. My name's Mark Salem, and we're going to go just like we promised to Tom. Tom, good morning. How can we help you?
All right, Mr. Mark, I got two small questions.
Okay.
What intervals fuels or how many miles should I drain the brake fluid?
You know, there's a sophisticated way to check the moisture content in it. And then a lot of people use the idea that when it starts looking like iced tea. And actually, I'm kind of a proponent of both of them. And specifically, if it looks like iced tea and fails the moisture test, then there's no question. Give me a mileage that you think would be appropriate in a round number way.
Probably the 60K mark. The 60K mileage interval, not saying your name.
Yeah.
There is, most manufacturers don't even recommend it. There are a few European makes that do.
With the silicone fluids.
They use that DOT-4.
Yeah.
Which is the high temperature stuff.
Yeah.
It's just common sense, really.
Yeah. And you know, if somebody has to go in there and replace calipers, that's the time to do it.
Right.
If somebody has to go in there and do an ABS module or a flow through on the ABS, then yeah, that's the time to do it. So if you open up the system, that's the time to do it.
Right.
But it's $100 to $200. So
I know, because I just put $50,000 on a 2014 Honda Pilot, and I would want to keep it maintained properly. So
yeah, but the Bible is your owner's manual, and there's one of two things. It's going to give you an interval, a stop, or it's not.
I thought it said $30,000. I thought that was kind of crazy.
To change the brake fluid?
Yeah.
Or check the brake fluid.
I read it wrong.
Okay.
Well, I check it all the time, but yeah. I could have read it wrong then. I thought it just changed it at 30.
Yeah. Here's what's going on right now. We used to have a 30, 60, 90 stopping point, and so we always were busy. And today, the newer cars don't even call for anything until 80, 90, and 100. So my industry is making up all this BS about what you need. I got a deal the other day, Mike. You're not going to believe this. It's from a major dealer chain. And he sent it to a friend of mine who sent it to me. And it says, many of the people that live in your geographical area have found that these two operations benefit their cars. And it is at the approximate mileage that you have, which is 60K. One of them is flush the fuel injectors, and you'll never guess for the rest of our lives what the second one was. Flush the fuel tank.
Oh, come on.
So if the fuel tank's not contaminated with water, gasoline on a diesel, or diesel on a gasoline, how many times have you ever pulled a fuel tank to clean it, as far as maintenance is concerned?
That's got to be the ultimate wallet flush there.
That's it. That's the wallet flush. We call it wallet flush in our industry. We're flushing all the money out of your wallet. So from 50 to 100, you're going to probably have to open up something. So I will go there. But I also want to – here, let me change your question. Mark, when was the last time you had a car towed in that the problem was caused by the brake fluid being really, really old? And the answer is, I don't remember ever, Mike. Now, don't count the old cars you work on, the 50 Chryslers right. and the Fords and stuff. But let's talk newer model cars, 96 and newer. He's shaking his head, but you can't hear his head wiggle.
Only if someone has contaminated their fluid.
That's right. it's a contamination issue. Yeah. So don't worry about it. I'd plan for it between 50 and 100.
As in put power steering. Yeah,
how about radiator fluid? When would I drain that?
That's definitely going to be in your owner's manual, but I'm betting that it's going to be between 60 and 100.
Okay, I'm at 50, so I should keep my eye on it.
Yeah.
30.
Yeah, and do it before summer. And then the next one you do, you'll do the hoses at the same time. So when you go pop over the 100,000-mile mark, it's kind of like, hey, do my hoses, and while you're doing it, flush it out and put new coolant in it. Then we're going to charge you for just the hoses, and you get the flush for free because we have to do it anyway.
All right, I'll start that next time I go in there.
All righty.
Have a good day.
All right. Thanks. Thank you, Tom. Time frames, I got to write this down. Time frames on brake fluid and tranny. Was that brake fluid and tranny? Okay. Don, you're up next. How can I help you?
Mark, how you been?
I'm good.
Hey, on my S truck, a little S truck, like you got a couple of them. I'm on 225s, 7015. How high of a tire can I go without having to change the gear and tranny?
You need to talk to Alan, because I can't answer that, but he can.
Okay.
There's a wide variety of tires that you could put on that, but I think we can get the width that you probably want, and we can probably get the diameter or the circumference that you don't have to do adaptations to the speedometer gear or something like that. So, but you're asking the wrong person. I only know that my son, Alan, can answer your question, and he can do it in a scientific way where I'm just flying with my zipper down. You know what I mean? Hey, I'm leaving, Don. You can't laugh at my jokes like that because everybody knows they're nasty, and I'm just teasing you. But anyway, thank you, Don. Thank you very much. When it comes to transmission shops, the really good guy in town here is Automatic Transmission Exchange. Phil knows Fred Flintstone. Phil and Fred Flintstone went to elementary school together, and he knows transmissions since they first came out with automatics all the way to today with the new electronics. You see, the difference between the old ones and the new ones is the old ones, we used to make them work with fluid and vacuum from the engine and cables. The new ones, we use electronics to open and close solenoids to give you first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth gear. So that's the real difference. But they still work the same. It's how we make them work. So pressurized fluid is a common denominator, but electric solenoids that open and close and send fluid in different ways, that's the difference. Automatic Transmission Exchange has been in Phoenix since 1968. He's on 40th Street in Washington. He's been around a long time. So for those of you in Phoenix that are looking for a transmission shop that might drive the car with you, and if you can show the symptom, they'll do that. That's Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. Gil, are the lines empty still?
Lines are open, sir.
Okay, no problem. I think we just got about everybody there. Oh, you know what else? Up in kind of your neck of the woods, Strictly Diesel's a good guy. Nate at Strictly Diesel has hands the size of tennis rackets. So if you work for him, you're always afraid of the slap upside the head. But Nate's too nice of a guy to ever do anything like that. But Nate's really a good diesel repair shop. He is a diehard diesel service, repair, diagnosis, and parts. Strictly Diesel Service and Repairs at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road in North Scottsdale. They repair Monday through Friday, and they sell parts, diesel stuff, 24 hours a day on their website. So Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. And another thing about him that's important is he does foreign and domestic light diesel trucks. So he doesn't do semis and that kind of stuff. He does import and domestic light diesel trucks. So if you've got the Ford, the Chevy, or the Dodge in a diesel, and it's a one-ton or less, or actually he can go up to a one-and-a-half-ton or something like that because the motor's just the same. So if you've got a diesel and nobody else can fix it, then maybe call Nate over at Strictly Diesel and see if it's something he's seen before and get an estimate on what he might charge you to check it out. Because there's three parts, the diagnostics, and sometimes, how many times out of 10, let's do 100. 100 diagnoses, how many times do you find it for $60 and fix it for $2? 10%?
Yep.
10% of the time? That's what happens a lot. A bad connection, a vacuum line that's fallen off, a connection on the evap system, a line that's broken. It's one of those things that just the diagnostic process sometime is 95% of the complete job. And there's many of us that aren't going to charge you anything but diagnostic time. We're just going to put diagnostic and repair in the same bracket, and you come in and you get. But the other side of the coin is equally as bad. Not equally as bad, but is quite different. And that's the diagnosis can be anywhere from $50 to $200 or $300, and the repair after it can be a lot. It's just the luck of the draw. But you just got to be able to find it. For those of you that go to the three-whiskered parts guy, and he pulls out his little cigarette pack size code reader, and then he says to you, oh, gosh, you have two oxygen sensor codes, but you have four. So let's look at your odometer. Oh, yes, yes, you need four of them. So he'll take you inside, and he'll very happily sell you four oxygen sensors for between $300 and $600. Mike, out of all the O2 sensors you do, how many of them necessitate a replacement of an O2 sensor versus something that's causing the O2 sensor to look stupid?
It's about a maybe 50-50 deal.
And it's easy 50-50. Right. It's easy 50-50. We're finding out that we're doing O2 sensors on an O2 code 20% of the time. 80% of the time, it's a vacuum leak. It's a rich condition. It's this or it's that fuel pressure regulator. The other day, we had a fuel pressure regulator leaking, and the O2 sensors were yelling, rich, rich, rich.
Yeah.
And so once we fix the fuel pressure regulator, then the O2 sensors start talking right, yep, like they should.
Yep.
So you don't want to go to the auto parts store because their job is to sell you parts. The code tells you what state the problem is. It's in Ohio. The technician has to find the street, the city, and the house number and before he can fix it. The O2 sensor code is talks in 1 to 5 volts. Okay, it talks to the computer. If it says 1, it says, well, I don't see much fuel coming out of the tailpipe. And if it says 5, what?
0 to 1 volt.
I know that, but I'm giving it to him in the easy way,
okay?
Right. It's I know that, but he's saying it's really you divide it up into 1 volt, and he's right, but it's easier for everybody to pick it up on a 1 to 5 reference. So if it's 1, it's saying, I could use more fuel, and if it's 5, it's, holy mackerel, it's raining gas. That's what the O2 sensor does. So if the O2 sensor's stuck on lean, 1, then it's typically a lean condition. A plugged fuel filter can cause a lean condition. A vacuum leak can cause a lean condition. A bad brake booster can cause a lean condition. An EGR valve that's stuck open can cause a lean condition. So you have to deal with all of that. You got to figure it out. On the rich side, the O2 sensor, on the lean side too, the O2 sensor is a battery. And the battery dies. So it sticks on the lean side. So you go in and you look at the fuel trim numbers that we have on our scanners, and you go, oh, the fuel trim's fine, but it's yelling lean. So you and then you look at the mileage and you go, okay, the battery's dead. So we replace the O2 sensor. But there's no rhyme or reason for the miles. So it could be at 60, it could be 100, it could be 150, it could be 200. It just depends. So I'm not trying to send you to a car repair shop so they're going to charge you a bunch of diagnostic money. But I can tell you, every day, once a week of my life, someone will tell me, oh, I put a $400 mass airflow sensor on it because there was a mass airflow sensor code and that didn't fix it. My diagnostic on that would have been half that or one-fourth of that $400 you guessed with. So guessing with car repair is perfectly fine. You guess with your money. But with the car repair industry, most of us are not going to guess with anybody's money. We're going to identify the problem, give you an estimate, and fix it. And obviously, you should ask for your old parts back. Because if we put in a mass airflow sensor that's $400 and that doesn't fix it because the air tube between the mass airflow sensor and the intake is torn, then you can bring back the old O2 sensor and say, Mark, you missed it. The check engine light came back and the code is the same. And can we start by putting the old mass airflow sensor in the car? My answer would be, yes, yeah, we'll start there. We'll put it back, and you can start with a $400 credit, whatever the cost of it is. So that's kind of how it works. That's why you ask for your old parts back in case the problem's still there. You can have them put the old part back on. Now, if the car part's $10, you're probably not going to do that. But it's okay to say to the shop, I have the same symptoms. So their responsibility is to kind of go in and find out what it is. Then they can decide what they're going to do. If the diagnosis was cheaper than they charged you, they may or may not give you a refund. I hope they do. If the diagnosis is $25 higher than what you already paid, I would hope they'd walk away from that. So those are the kinds of things that you have. How long have you been in this business?
Well, I grew up in the trade.
Okay.
When I was 5 years old, my dad built a shop next to the house I grew up in.
Okay.
He's still there, 53 years.
Okay.
So that kind of gives away my age.
What did he have you doing? My kids started by sweeping cigarette butts off the parking lot, but today nobody smokes.
I was the go-to guy to his toolbox. I knew every wrench and every tool in his toolbox.
1 minute.
Go get me this. Go get me that.
So you were his gopher.
Oh, yeah.
Go for this. Go for that. We still have those guys.
Yeah.
Those guys are youngsters that want to come into the trade. We usually typically assign them to a couple of technicians. Go get this filter. Go do this. Hold this for me. Here's what I'm doing. Here's why I'm doing it. So we can give them a flavor by just talking out loud. We don't have to be training them. We just have to talk out loud. And so you talk out loud, and then all of a sudden, they get it or they don't.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the entry level of what we do. So anyway, my email address is mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. So if you have a car question Monday through Friday, you can send me an email. If you would be so kind to give me a phone number, I might call you back or I'll answer your email. And here's the problem. The problem is sometimes I have to ask you questions. So I don't want to get into some long, you know, 6, 8, 10 email exchange. So I just call you. But I'm going to call you from a blocked line for obvious reasons, and I'll always leave my name. So I'll tell you I'll call you back in a half an hour, I'll call you back tomorrow morning at 10, or I'll call you back tomorrow morning at 7. So we'll be back. See you next week.